We're open for business live.
This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 29th of September, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're back broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio station in the showroom workstation building in the centre of Sheffield. What have you been up to this week? Have you been to a large new furniture store which has opened in Sheffield, creating a number of jobs? More on that later. I was in town earlier this week and I was astonished by a huge queue of people queuing for 30, 40, 50 minutes for a free hot dog from said store. Were you one of them? What do you think? What else has been going on this week? Well, plenty, actually. But what do we have today? Well, today on the programme, Jay Bahani is back in the studio with us to give us an update on changes and case law and developments and news in employment law. So listen out for this. There's loads of interesting stuff has been going on since Jay was last on the programme. So more on that in a moment or two. But meanwhile, there have been some really fascinating, interesting figures published about social enterprise, the growth of the sector in the UK, their development. More on those figures later on as well. What else is going on? Well, a new report has set out details about how the north of England can tackle the productivity gap and create an extra, potentially, £850,000. So it includes ideas about leading the way on the Internet of Things, investing over £1 billion into portable nuclear reactors, and powering Leeds with hydrogen. And the report is called The Powerhouse 2050, The North's Route Map for Productivity. It sets out evidence-based and costed proposals for four sectors where the North could, with the backing of government funding and also business support, rival the best countries and the best regions in the world, it says. And it's the fruits of research and workshops and engagement with businesses from the Northern Powerhouse Partnership. And it covers actions needed to make the North's capabilities, which include, of course, advanced manufacturing and materials, energy, digital and health innovation, world class. It's worth taking a look at the report if you want to know more. Powerhouse 2050, the North's route map for productivity. The report has been formally launched today. So, what else is going on? Well, what are you up to? What have you been doing? What have your business or social enterprise been doing this week? Don't forget, I'm always interested in hearing from you. You can get in touch. You can also comment on what's going on at government level, whether that's central government, whether that's national news, or whether it's local news. They've got a view on devolution, for example. Lots of people do. Or on social enterprise, or on, all manner of things. Get in touch. Email Jamie at sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. We're always interested in hearing from you. Nearly time to turn to our first guest today, Jay Bahani, in the studio with me. Before we do, quick heads up. We weren't on air last Friday, but the Friday before we were. We broadcast an interview with Curtis Wright of LochiPay, a digital payment wallet, and Sheffield Community Technologies, trying to support businesses and support the local economy. We also broadcast an interview that Friday with Scott Colvin. He's the author of a book called How to Get Politicians How to Use Politicians to Get What You Want. Fascinating interview. And if you missed those, then catch the podcast because it's up on the Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org. Go to radio shows, find Business Live. And 2 weeks ago, Friday the 15th of September, is the podcast from there. Well worth a listen to. Some really, really useful, fascinating advice from those guests. But without further ado, it's about time to turn to our studio guest today, Jay Bihani. And Jay, thanks very much for coming in today. Good morning.
Morning, Jamie.
How are you?
Yep, good. Had a good summer.
Splendid.
Very, very busy start to September. So.
There's always a back-to-school feeling in September, isn't there? And yeah. Sort of after the first week of the month, holidays are soon forgotten, and the month is always really busy, isn't it, when everyone gets back stuck into work.
Yeah, but I do like that. I get a bit lost when I don't have a routine. I like to get back to work, and then before long, of course, it's Christmas, so we have another down period.
Indeed we do. So you've been observing some of the things going on in employment law, and there have been plenty of developments. We've just mentioned one of them, actually, at the start of the programme today. They were giving out hot dogs in town, a furniture store, but it's created lots of jobs as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we should celebrate businesses that are locating to Sheffield and creating jobs. So I'll say it's IKEA.
Yes,
I haven't been yet. I will be going. But I need some tea lights, so I'll be going. Yeah. IKEA opened officially yesterday, and they've created over, I think it's 480 jobs.
Yes.
So that's fantastic news.
Yeah.
And I think they need to make sure that they've got other things sorted, like their traffic control and everything, because it could be mayhem, especially running up to Christmas with it being so close to Meadowhall. But no, that's really good news, and they'll have jobs at lots of different levels, and you know, a great addition to Sheffield, I'd say.
Absolutely, it is, isn't it? And I understand that 90% of the jobs that have been created at IKEA, and as you say, 480 jobs, 90% of those jobs are jobs for people from South Yorkshire. So
it's
created employment for the region, which is, as you say, it's wonderful news. It's great news.
Yeah.
And the store is the 20th IKEA in the UK, and... again, as you mentioned, Jay, the roles that they've created are wide, very wide. Mm. So, so great news, really, really interesting. And I think it's the business's 30th anniversary in the UK as well. They're well established now in the firm. In the country, and they've said they're also opening stores in Exeter and in Greenwich by the end of 2018 too. Mm. There we go. Good. Mm. So celebration of job creation.
Yep. That's all good. But with employing people comes lots of other challenges for businesses. And so my next sort of big thing since the last time I was on the show was the abolition of legal fees to start tribunal claims.
Yes, now this is really huge, isn't it? And in fact, that happened sort of the day after the last time you were on the show, or the last time we recorded the interview.
Yes. Yeah, that's right, because I'd left you when we were recording the last show, and I got in my car and I was driving and I heard the Supreme Court news. Now, you know, not everybody will appreciate my sentiment, but as an employment lawyer, it'll keep me in a job.
Yes, indeed.
So I was quite happy to see that, because it was never right that tribunal fees were introduced in the way they were. So I'll just tell you a bit about what had happened. So pre-2013, if you wanted to make a claim against your employer for some injustice, such as unfair dismissal or discrimination, you didn't have to pay any sort of fee. So there were lots and lots of tribunal claims. In 2013, overnight, with no real consultation, fees were introduced, but at a level that prevented access to justice, I think.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to start a claim, they had to pay £250. If they wanted to take a claim to a hearing, it was £950 in addition.
Yep.
And other costs along the way for various things. So we saw a 70% reduction in tribunal claims.
That's astounding, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And I think the government's...
It's a huge barrier to people who are perhaps... had absolutely no resources to take a legitimate claim forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And I completely agree that, you know, there were some vexatious litigants, as we call them, people that were making claims that were spurious. But, you know, that's a small minority. And yet this was brought in, and despite all the concerns from lots of interested groups, there didn't seem to be any challenge to it or any change in the government's view until this Supreme Court decision, where there was a unanimous finding by the Supreme Court judges that that was not something that could be sustained and wasn't was detrimental and discriminatory in itself. And now there are no tribunal fees to pay, but also there's going to be a backlog of refunds coming. So cases where people have had to pay a fee, the government have been ordered to repay them. So we're talking about millions of pounds in fees.
They are indeed.
Now, from an employer's point of view, and we act for lots and lots of SME businesses, you know, they need to protect themselves because they will see an upturn in claims.
Yep.
And people may have the view that, well, it's not right that people can make claims without paying a fee. And I have to agree with that. I think there should be a fee, but it should be a modest fee. Because if you've just lost your job, the last thing you're going to do is want to take a gamble on starting, you know, stressful and costly court proceedings. So, yes, it did price a lot of people out of justice, and I'm really pleased to see that the law won.
Yeah, so this puts some fairness back into the system. Okay, so this is huge. This is significant. As you say, I mean, yes, of course, it keeps you gainfully employed, but it actually... is a victory for ordinary people who were priced out of actually taking legitimate claims. Okay. So big change there. Now, have the effects already started, or when can we expect to see a significant upturn?
It's early days yet, so no official statistics, but, you know, just in my own little sort of microcosm, my own firm, I've definitely seen people with more of an appetite to bring a claim. This is individuals. I've seen the business clients and charities that we deal with more concerned about the action they can take as regards their employees in case a claim will be brought. So I'm absolutely sure that over the next few months we'll start seeing a rise in the figures.
Okay. Really interesting that, and watch this space. It'd be interesting to track the figures there. Okay, good. What else has been happening?
Okay, so employment status has been big news, as we've talked about before, and I delivered a seminar the other morning on employment status, and we were looking at lots of case law and where some of these employers fell down. So I'm really sort of, you know, interested in the whole sea change. So the latest victim, you might say, is a business called Addison Lee, which has lots and lots of self-employed drivers. They have about 3,800 of them, and they've also now had a finding that some of these individuals were workers rather than self-employed.
Self-employed,
which then means that they're entitled to national minimum wage, to paid holidays and sickness, statutory sick pay. So, you know, another big one. Uber this week is having its hearing of the appeal to the finding that their drivers are workers. So that will be really interesting.
So that appeal hearing coming up very soon.
Started this week, right. I think, yes, on Wednesday morning, I think.
And so Addison Lee's finding that their drivers are workers, that came after some of their drivers took action.
Yes.
And so... Addison Lee notable for being huge in scale, not as big as Uber, obviously, but very, very large in terms of the type of traditional firm in that sector. So yes. Are they likely to appeal that?
I think they're likely to appeal, yes. And really, I did a bit of an analysis on where they've fallen down.
Mm.
And there's a saying, I think it comes from Australian law, you know, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yes.
And so basically, you know, the premise of that is that you've got to look at the reality of the situation, not just whether there's a contract that says somebody is self-employed, although that's a very, very good start and, you know, that should be in place. But you look at the practicalities of the situation. So are they using branded vans, as in Pimlico Plumbers?
Yes.
Are they being paid on a regular basis rather than on an invoice basis, you know, akin to a wage? Are they being expected to work a minimum number of hours? Are they being told where to go and how to do their job, you know, that whole issue of control? So there's this sort of multi-test to determine whether they're self-employed or not. And unfortunately, most of these businesses are failing in arguing that these people were genuinely self-employed.
Yes, quite indeed. And we've seen commentary on this in terms of courier companies as well, and so on. So, yeah. So if someone who works for, say, that's the issue, isn't it? Who is a driver for Addison Lee? Then is wearing Addison Lee uniform, is being told exactly what to do, then what you're saying is, if it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, the court determination appears to be that they are workers, not self-employed.
Yes.
Okay, so that's interesting, and Uber's hearing is going to be interesting as well this week in terms of their appeal against this. Uber have been all over the news as well for other reasons in terms of transport for London's determination or announcement that they wouldn't be renewing their licence, although they will appeal that and they can carry on operating until that appeal is finished, I understand. But
they've had a lot of people sign this petition to keep Uber in London.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a lot of support for them. And I have to say that whenever I've used an Uber taxi, I've done my own little bit of research and spoken to every taxi driver that I've come across over the last few months. And they all feel that, you know, they're quite happy with the arrangement. You know, they like the flexibility of the arrangement they've got.
So this is going to be really, really interesting as this plays out. I mean, I understand that TfL have raised concerns. This is specific to Uber in London, but they've raised concerns about the company's approach to dealing with harassment, to a number of issues as well.
Yeah, they've had sex discrimination allegations brought against them, and I think that's formally now in process, in that claims have been lodged with regard to sex discrimination as well.
Yes. Okay, so plenty going on there. This one's going to continue to be high profile.
It is. And then the other high profile case at the moment, which is affecting lots of us, possibly me as well next week, is the Ryanair cancellation of flights. And actually, there's a link there because, again, it's coming down to some extent, a determination of whether people were self-employed. So I hadn't understood, when all these flights have been cancelled, the reason for that, Ryanair say, is because they messed up their pilot rotas and they have to have so much holiday time. So there's a question mark over whether they can ask these pilots to defer their holidays. But actually, a lot of the people they take on are self-employed pilots, not employees. So again, it's coming down to, but in this case, you know, with their employees, they don't have the flexibility that they do with their self-employed pilots. So can they compel them to cancel their holidays or defer them so that they can get these flights up and running? And I think today at 5 o'clock is their deadline. Aside from the employment law issues, you know, their deadline to do with the aviation authority or whatever, to deal with this situation, because they're not allowed to leave people with uncertainty over cancelled flights.
Right.
So that's quite an interesting one.
It is. And as you say, it's not necessarily widely appreciated that the pilots, many of them are self-employed. Many of them are employed out of different different bases all over Europe, and possibly even with different terms from different bases from each other. So, first of all, as you say, you mentioned this might affect you in terms of.
Well, I'm going on holiday next Saturday, but I don't know who I'm flying with, I have to confess. And when I actually get a minute to sit and read the papers, I need to make sure it's not Ryanair.
Yes, indeed. Gosh. Okay. Well, let's hope for the sake of their customers. Let's hope for the sake of their pilots. They get this sorted out. It's as you say, it's a high profile one, and their chief exec is famously bombastic in his approach and his media interviews. Michael O'Leary. Sounds like, from what's been covered, that he's been quite bombastic in terms of dealing with pilots' representatives as well. So,
yeah.
5 o'clock deadline today, then.
Yeah. see what happens, yeah.
Indeed. So that was a high-profile one, another high-profile one. Yeah.
And then a couple of little things, if we've got time.
Yes, certainly.
Apprenticeship. So Sheffield is really at the forefront of lots of great apprenticeship schemes. I'm a governor at Sheffield College, so I see some of the work we're doing there, and it's really great to see different routes to careers.
Yes.
But apparently apprenticeships are now growing at a faster rate than graduate roles.
That's interesting.
And I'm a real believer that there are different routes, and that there are different skills that we need to nurture. And having teenage children myself, I'm a lawyer, but they've got no interest in doing what I do, and I would just hope that they have an opportunity in this city to do something that they find fulfilling and that will lead to a well-paid or reasonably paid job at the end of it, rather than just having an automatic assumption that they'll go to university or do A-levels and then go to university and get a professional services job.
Yes.
And so with the apprenticeships, that's definitely something that we're seeing more and more people doing, perhaps who traditionally would have just gone on to go to university.
So this is very interesting indeed. Apprenticeships growing at a faster rate than graduate jobs. So is this the number of apprenticeships, the number of employers using apprenticeships, or the number of apprenticeships themselves, or the number of people getting them?
I think it's apprenticeship roles.
Yes.
And that's probably as a result of the apprenticeship levy.
Yes.
So because large employers have to pay this apprenticeship levy, it's in their interest to use the apprenticeship system and to take on lots of apprentices. Mm. Although, of course, the biggest user of them is probably SMEs as a whole, but we've got some large employers in Sheffield, who take on lots and lots of apprentices. So, I think it's in terms of the roles that are available.
Well, that's great to hear this. Great to hear that apprenticeships are growing, roles are growing, and so on. And the levy then sounds like, which came into force in April, didn't it? It sounds like it's a success so far. And from your perspective, not only as a parent, but also as a governor, as you mentioned at Sheffield College, this is creating opportunities for people too.
Yes, yeah absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. Good. Good. So you mentioned a couple of smaller things coming up as well.
The other thing that I thought was quite interesting was the number of working mums is up 1.2 million since 1996. What the figures are saying is that 73.7% of mums are working now. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because there's an argument that that's because flexible working is much more utilised now and commonplace. But actually, in practice, I'm not sure that it is in all workplaces. And you do wonder whether, as somebody who's been through it myself with young children working, whether it's just actually a symptom of quite hard times and the fact that there's a necessity for both parents to work. What will be the impact of that on children and on families, not having that the work-life balance that they, you know, that was really we were driving towards. So I don't know. I don't want to be unduly pessimistic. Maybe it is.
No, I think that's a really good point, though, that you raise in terms of the reasons behind that rise. Mm. And that's since 1996, you mentioned. That increase. And so I suppose since that time, if one were to look at the rise in, say, the cost of living or the cost of housing, whether that and the cost of rent or the cost of the cost of housing, whether renting or buying, compared with average incomes as well, one might see that simply life has become more expensive rather than being able to praise the fact that there are more opportunities opening. As you say, there could be lots of reasons behind it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the cost of childcare, you know, childcare is very, very expensive.
Yes, it is, indeed. Yeah. But that is an interesting stat, of course. Okay, good. And you're busy. You've got lots going on. Events as well as working with your clients, of course.
Yes. So we deliver lots of training. So we've been doing some really interesting equality and diversity training, which these days we tend to call unconscious bias training. And we've had a requirement from one big organisation to particularly focus on gender fluidity.
Right. Yeah.
So that's quite interesting because, you know, traditionally in our equality and diversity training, we used to look very much at race issues and gender. But now, you know, there are so many other things that we need to think about to protect our people that we're employing. And when you see our, you know, young people and the kind of diversity of young people, or the accepted diversity, perhaps, you know, I'm sure it was always there, but, you know, people are more accepted however they conduct their lives or however they are. And then, of course, that's got to be dealt with in the workplace.
Yes.
And not everybody knows how to deal with people that are from a completely different background or operate in a very different way to them.
No.
So that training's been a real eye-opener for us, as well as, you know, the clients that we're delivering this for.
Yes, it must be. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And
what else have we been busy with? Yeah, lots of work on this employment status, because everybody is keen to make sure that at least they've got their freelance contracts in place.
Yeah.
So we're drafting freelance contracts an awful lot at the moment. But as I said, you know, that's just one of the things you need to do. So showing our clients how to differentiate between their employees and their self-employed people is something that we're working on to try and protect themselves from some of these issues that have come up in the big employment status cases.
Yes.
And I've been approached on that employment status by a BBC freelance journalist who, this is quite an interesting one, because he's been saying to me that there's all this publicity attached to the gender pay differential with the big names, but there's no publicity relating to the freelance BBC journalists all across the country who have had their arrangements changed in terms of the way they work. So some of these have been converted from self-employed freelancers to PAYE, but not getting the benefits of being an employee. So that's going to be a really interesting one for us to get our teeth into, because we've not looked at why that's happened and how that's happened and whether there's been a lawful process to make that happen. But I'm quite looking forward to looking into that one.
Well, that'll affect hundreds, thousands of freelance journalists working for regional BBC operations, for example, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very interesting one. Okay, well, watch this space. Okay, well, thanks so much for coming in and giving us that update, Jay. That's been really fascinating, really interesting as ever. And, of course, you put out regular newsletters, which are free for people to receive and sign up to, so they can do that from your website. You're tweeting regularly about this, and you put on a number of events as well as training and so on. So people can find out more about you at your website, at your Twitter, and so on. Do you want to give out the addresses for us?
Yep. So the website is www.bihayani, which is BHAYANI law.co.uk. And the Twitter is @BihayaniHR Law.
Superb. Well, Jay Biani, Biani HR Law, thank you so much for coming in today, sharing your update with us on what's been going on and what will affect you in terms of business employment law. So, Jay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Get in touch. Tell us what you're up to. Comment on what's going on in business and in social enterprise. Send me a message, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Find Jamie Veitch on Twitter as well. That was Jay Biani. We're going to take a break for a track of music. This is John Martin, Solid Air.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Sheffield Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. That was John Martin, Solid Air. Before that, Jay Biani was in the studio with us, giving us an update on what's been going on in employment law. So whether you're a business or a social enterprise, whether you work with employees or with freelancers or potentially with workers, you need to know what's going on. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, then panic not. The podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find today's programme. Now, talking about employment, it's notable that some stats were published earlier on this month by the ONS, the Office for National Statistics. Their figures were released on the 19th of September, and they showed that the number of people employed in their main job through zero-hours contracts has fallen. And the data is based on evidence submitted by employees. And the ONS's data found that there were 883,000 people on zero-hour contracts in the 3 months to the end of June 2017. That's down from 903,000 in the same period in 2016. Now, as well as asking employees, ONS also asks businesses about the number of their staff on zero-hours contracts. And they published this data at the same time on the 19th of September as well. And they found that currently 1.4 million workers are employed without guaranteed hours. This is also down from 1.7 million in May 2016 and from a peak of over 2.1 million in May 2015. And in ONS's survey, 6% of the businesses that they surveyed said that they use zero-hours contracts. That's down from 11% 2 years ago. So the Office for National Statistics have a senior statistician by the name of David Freeman. And he said that the figures suggest that a tighter labour market is making it harder for employers to recruit workers without guaranteeing them a set number of hours as unemployment falls to the lowest level since the mid-1970s. But an organisation called the Resolution Foundation has argued that whilst it's welcome news on jobs, it's failing to feed through into pay packets. And they also added that with the pace of inflation increasing again, there is a risk that the pay squeeze could get worse before it starts to get better. They say that wages are still £16 a week lower than in 2008. And unless things improve, there could be 15 years of lost pay growth. What's your view on that? Always interested in hearing from you. So please do get in touch. What else is going on? Well, social enterprise. I promised some social enterprise figures, and these are really, really fascinating, really interesting. So according to one new study, there are 471,000 social enterprises in the UK. This is interpretation of new government research, and they've found that businesses which put profit into social or environmental causes account for almost 9% of the total UK small business population. So this is really, really fascinating stuff. And this is from a study commissioned by the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport and the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. There's a roundup of this on the Enterprise Nation blog. It's worth taking a look at that. But they say that the UK social enterprises are more profitable and more innovative than traditional businesses. Now, the State of the Social Enterprise report is something that comes out every 2 years. It's supported by the bank Santander, but it's actually published, put together and researched by Social Enterprise UK. Social Enterprise UK themselves being a representative body for social enterprises in the UK, they lobby government on social entrepreneurs' behalf. They describe themselves as a leading global authority on social enterprise and the biggest network of social enterprises in the UK, and have led public policy on social enterprise for 15 years. Now, their biannual report comes out every 2 years, State of Social Enterprise Report. It's the largest, it's the most representative survey of social enterprises in the UK, and it was published last week. And findings are fascinating. First of all, 25% of social enterprises are under 3 years old. That's three times the proportion of startups compared with SME businesses. 28% of social enterprises are based in the most deprived communities in the UK. 41% of social enterprises are led by women. Over half of social enterprises have a majority female workforce. Diversity. Social enterprise leadership teams reflect the communities where social enterprises live and work, with 12% of social enterprises being BAME-led and 34% having BAME directors, according to the latest report. 78% of social enterprises report that they pay the living wage to their employees, with a ratio between the average wages of highest and lowest paid employees of 2.7 to 1. And two-thirds of social enterprises are supporting people from disadvantaged groups. 44% of social enterprises are employing them. Some social enterprises sell to other social enterprises, some to the public sector. Many, though, do sell to the public. 27% of social enterprises sell to the public as their main source of income, according to the report. And really fascinating, 47% of social enterprises say they grew their turnover in the last 12 months. That's higher than SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises. 34% of those grew their turnover in the last 12 months. So social enterprises are commercially resilient, according to Social Enterprise UK and their report. So if you want to read more, the State of Social Enterprise survey is publicly available. You need to go to socialenterprise.org.uk/the-future-of-business-social-enterprise-survey-2017. I will tweet the link to that from my Twitter account, Jamie Veitch, at the end of this program. You don't have to have a Twitter account yourself. You don't have to be a Twitter user. Just go to twitter.com, look up Jamie Veitch, J-A-M-I-E-V-E-I-T-C-H, and you'll be able to find a link through to that report and to other things that we've mentioned in the show today really, really easily if you want to follow any of this up. The State of Social Enterprise UK report is 48 pages, written for Social Enterprise UK by Nick Temple, their assistant chief executive, and with a foreword by Lord Victor Adebowale, who is Social Enterprise UK's chair. It's a fascinating read. It's worth taking a look at, and really, really interesting to look at the findings. Particularly interesting is that social enterprises, we know they're contributing to social impact, creating social value in communities in the UK, but they're financially and commercially resilient too, according to the report. So fascinating stuff. Do take a look at the report. I'll tweet the link out. So what else has been going on? Plenty more to talk about coming up in a moment or two, but we're going to take another break for a quick track of music, and we're going to play something by The Temper Trap. This is Thick as Thieves.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Sheffield Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. That was a track of music, Thick as Thieves by The Temper Trap. We've been talking today about 0 hours contracts and some stats from the Office for National Statistics earlier on. We've also been talking about some social enterprise stats showing that social enterprises in the UK are growing and are thriving. And we've had Jay Barney in the studio today giving you an update on the latest in employment law and news and developments that will affect you. Now, if you've only just tuned in, don't panic. The podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. What else is going on? Well, S&4Cs, which is an organisation celebrating 50 years of providing older people with a helping hand when they need it most. They've been on the programme 2 or 3 times in the past. They've been in touch with us today, with me, to ask if we can give them a shout out. So, hello, S&4Cs, we most certainly can. And we're giving you a shout out because S&4Cs have a fantastic event on the 16th of November. So if you like karaoke, if you want to sing karaoke to a live rock band, and let's face it, who wouldn't want to do that? At Yellow Arch Studios on the 16th of November, well, S&4Cs have the event for you. So this is a fundraising event. It's going to be huge amounts of fun. You can get in touch with Erica Hill at S&4Cs. You can phone them up to book your place on 0114 250 5293. You can take a look at the S&4Cs website, but the easiest way to purchase a place is to go to skiddle.com and look up S&4Cs. I'll be tweeting the link to that at the end of the program today. Sounds like fun. If you're good at singing, and, well, even if you're not, why don't you get down there? Sing with a live rock band. Now, also, the enterprise team at Sheffield Hallam University, they got in touch with us because they had the Hallam Enterprise Award last night. These awards were an opportunity for a number of enterprise students and graduates from Sheffield Hallam University to showcase their businesses to a guest list of local businesses, of university partners, sponsors, and so on. Santander Bank sponsored that event, and there were prizes: £5,000 for an overall winner last night, and 2 runner-up prizes of £2,000, and there was a Best Pitch Award voted for by the audience of the night. So congratulations to the winners. Last night's winner was Official Bullion. Take a look at Official Bullion on Twitter, or Bullion Chocolate. They craft single origin chocolate from bean to bar. They won in the Hallam Enterprise Awards last night, so they got a prize. They got a prize of £5,000. There were 2 runner-up prizes of £2,000 each, and those last night went to I Love a Dantan and also to Nelly Naylor. So Nelly Naylor Photography, and congratulations to them. And again, the £2,000 will make a massive difference to those businesses. And there was a Best Pitch Award on the night that went to Harvey Morton IT. So well done, everyone. Great news there. Those are the Sheffield Hallam University Hallam Enterprise Awards. Now, I'll tweet out links to the winners. You can look at their innovative businesses set up by student entrepreneurs, graduates, and students at Sheffield Hallam University. Congratulations. So, almost time to bring today's programme to a close. We'll be back on air next Friday. So tune in then. But don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 all the way through to noon. So please tune in to that. Enjoy it. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Jay Barney for coming into the radio studio today to give us a detailed briefing on what's been going on, and a lot has been going on in employment law. And thanks very much also to Sangeeta in the studio with us, looking after the sound as our sound engineer today. So we'll be back on air next Friday. Do get in touch. Send me an email, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Drop me a text, 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Because whether you have something to say, whether you want to comment on figures what we've been discussed on a national level, on policy, on case law, on developments that affect you, your business, your social enterprise, whether you want to put yourself forward to be on the programme or someone else forward to be on the show, we're always really interested in hearing from you. We'll play out now with a bit of Kate Rusby. This is Underneath the Stars.
We're open for business live.
This is Sheffield Live.